Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jarlath.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Rob.
Today we're going to be interviewing somebody from the demo scene. The Commodore 64 and Amiga were well known for games, but the demo scene that developed at the time was in some ways a counterculture. Rather than being commercially driven, this was a movement where creativity and technical ability were the currency, and competitions were judged on artistic merit rather than sales figures. ArtState was founded in 2009, and Andre Wilk is with us. Hi, Andre. Thanks for joining us.
Well, hi, guys. Very nice to be here.
You're based in New Zealand at the moment. Have you ever met Trevor Dickinson?
Kind of, yes. I was working at the New Zealand Stock Exchange, and as you may know, Trevor Dickinson's on a board of a couple companies. And on one occasion, I believe he was in a boardroom, and I was talking to this other chap from this company. And I wasn't actually aware at the time that that was him. I knew that Trevor Dickinson lived in Wellington, but I had no idea of his involvement with businesses at the time. So I kind of missed out on the opportunity. I mean, it would have been great to catch up with him, have a chat, but it just didn't happen. Well, not really. So, yeah.
That's a small world.
It is.
So, Andre, what was your introduction to, you know, the Commodore machines, Amiga? When was the first time that see it?
Oh, well, that would have been a very, very long time ago. Probably, I think it may have been 84. I think it was 84. I had a Commodore 64, C2N tape deck. I had a 1520 printer plotter. As far back as that. And then later I got into the Amiga, but the 64 is where I got the interest into the demo scene. I had a friend at the time, Simon Plum, who used to write, I think, a column in Computer Shopper magazine in the UK. He had some contacts at the time that used to, mail trade, and he used to get like the demos. And there were a lot of demos basically from the CompuNet service being spread around through the mail scene as well. So, I used to visit my friend. He would like transfer some of these files from disk to cassette, because I was a lowly tape user at the time. And I just was basically hooked from that point on. I was just absolutely in awe of all these, graphics, coding effects, and, music. It was just amazing. And I've basically kept with it ever since. Basically, coding-wise, I tinkered a little bit in the very late 80s, but not really much success. And then I got my Amiga, which would have been, in August 89, I went to Digicon Computer Services. They were based in Milton Keynes. A friend of mine drove me there, picked up the Amiga 500 10-star pack for the, I think, quite a good price at the time, £389 is what I paid. And then I started to tinker, just obviously like most people did, games, messing around with D-Paint, things like that. But then eventually I came across a couple articles in Amiga Computing International by Jolyon Ralph, who, I don't know if you know this, he was in a demo group called SAE, Sharon and Joy, at the time.
I didn't know that, actually.
You're aware of them, are you?
I know the names, and I didn't have the connection there at all.
Okay, so basically he was famous for coding Amazing Tunes 2 music disc. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's got the lady silhouette dancing, the large speakers left and right. It comes on 3 discs. It's quite a famous demo, but I'm aware of it, but... and then he started doing a series of articles in Amiga Computing International regarding coding, like basically how to take over the take over the system in a clean fashion rather than just hitting the hardware. And that's how it started. So I ended up coding a couple things, some intros and things like that. But then, oddly enough, although I went to a couple Amiga demo parties. For example, I went to the Anarchy 92 party in Barnsley, and then the following year, I went to Norway for the Gathering 93 in Lillestrøm, which was quite a large party. The local film crews turned up from the news channels and covered it. So it was just an amazing sight. I mean, especially when the demo competition was on, all the lights were off, and it's just like hundreds upon hundreds of monitors just glowing. I'm surprised they had enough power. But that was actually, I think, held in a place called Skandershallen. It was at the time the largest indoor kind of like sports center, prior to the Olympic Games in Lillehammer, I think the following year. But yeah, that was quite an experience. But I found that after that, the Amiga scene was starting to dwindle a little bit, in the sense that the I got my A1200, and I think, when was it, 90, what was the year when Commodore went bust again? Was it 93 or 94? Am I slightly 90, off here?
94.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah. April.
The following year, I bought an Amiga 1200. I forget the name of the supplier. Something I found in Amiga format, I believe. Played around with it, played demos, a couple of games initially, because it came with things like Frontier, Elite.
Ah, yeah, absolutely fabulous game.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into some coding after 2 weeks, just to, you know, try and get to grips with things. And unfortunately, the internal disk drive wouldn't permit me to write any files to disk, which I hear is quite, actually, I spoke to people since that time, and it's quite common, apparently. There were quite a few faulty drives out there. So I ended up, you know, calling the supplier and stating that, you know, it's faulty. And I found out Commodore had actually gone under. And I just basically said, look, you need to take this away because, you know, I'd rather have the money back because I don't think I was guaranteed even getting a replacement. But that said, I had a friend in a demo group called The Welder. He was a member of a UK group called Divine, which, are you familiar with Hoffman, the musician?
Yes,
he goes to a lot of the, yeah. Well, he was in that group as well. In fact, I was a member of it briefly. He actually lent me a spare Amiga 1200 with a hard disk. So I was able to work on a little couple things at the time. And he lent it me, I think, for about 2 years, which is quite nice of him. He forgot, actually. But yeah, that was, you know, my introduction, basically, to all things Commodore. And I've basically held on to it. I mean, I'm actually doing a lot of code now on the 64. You know, I've been basically doing the Modular Sound series, which is basically a music collection, but I've tried to make the graphics in an Amiga style, but on the 64.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is basically Amiga modules that have been rewritten natively on the SID chip itself. And they're actually to a very, you know, good standard as well. So I'm on issue 10 now, and every issue there's an Amiga tune which has been converted on the intro, and then the main selector screen has an additional 5 tunes. And I think I've got enough music now for perhaps another 5 or 6 episodes, I believe. I've got to say hello to my friends in the High Voltage SID Collection because they're the ones who provided these tunes. I was actually a member of it for about a year, HVSC, which was good. Mm-hmm. But I keep in touch with them. And there's so many tunes there, and you can search for them. And I basically, that's where I can't, you know, collect them from.
Good stuff. So you were based in the UK at the time?
Oh, yes. I've only been in New Zealand for just over 10 years now, but we've actually got plans on returning perhaps middle to late next year.
I see. When you got your first Commodore and it was around 1984, what was the scene like? It was around Milton Keynes, or is that where you're based?
No, Birmingham.
Okay.
Yeah, I bought it from Milton Keynes, but my friend kindly drove me from Birmingham, very kind of.
Right. That's very kind. Were you involved in much of the Commodore scene then in the local area, or?
Well, only with a couple like local contacts. I mean, it was quite amateurish then. It was basically, you know, people were swapping files, you know, on tape back then, a lot of us.
Yeah.
But my friend Simon, he was quite lucky to have, you know, 1541 disk drive. You know, he would like get stuff from some, you know, local chap that was a member of a group called LADS, which was Liverpool and District Spreadpoint. And they used to swap stuff all over the UK with, you know, various people.
Right.
And then, you know, I'd visit my friend Simon, and then, you know, you show me the latest demos, whatever, and transfer them with this, you know, I can't remember the name of the software now. But he'd like transfer them to tape form, which was very kind of him. And so it was quite small, I guess, in a sense, because not too many people, I think, were aware of the demo scene or even the CompuNet service that was, you know, set up with an initiative with, I think, British Telecom and Commodore at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that basically allowed people to upload demos. I mean, it's, for example, people like Rob Hubbard and the like, people like Bob Stevenson, who was a graphics artist, did work for System 3. They all kind of hung out on this online community, which, unfortunately, I didn't have access to. But I used to get the fruits, as it were, from passed down. And amazingly, you know, people were spreading those things. And it was absolutely an amazing time. I mean, it's incredibly creative. So, yeah, but the scene itself in that particular area, people were mainly just, you know, swapping games and things. But I was more fascinated by the demos, to be honest.
Yeah.
And today now, do you have a preference between the Commodore 64 and the Amiga, say?
I think I've got equal love. I mean, I've dedicated a lot of time to them, and there's a lot of memories there. So it's something I don't think I'll shake off, really. I am doing a lot of stuff on the C64. I think I had unfinished business. So, you know, I've, you know, been trying to basically try and make some 64 stuff look a lot crisper by using like high res mode and using lots of sprite overlays to get around the fact that we don't have bitmap, bitplanes on the 64.
Yeah.
Things
yeah.
like that. But I bring my love of the Amiga to the 64 because I'm trying to kind of emulate some of the looks. I mean, some people have said, oh, your stuff looks like Amiga. You know, I've got some other projects I'm currently working on. They'll take a bit of time, but again, they use, you know, kind of high res mode and sort of ideas from the Amiga in them.
Mm.
So yeah, equal love.
Good, good. Right. For people who might not know, what would be a brief definition of a demo in your opinion?
Well, normally, a demo generally is just basically someone showing their coding prowess or their music or their graphics, and sometimes all of them, well, normally most of them are all combined together at the same, you know, in the same package. But I mean, in the early days, it was very much a case of, you know, a bitmap drawing, a scrolly message, and that was about it, and the music. But it wasn't very, there weren't too many things going on. I mean, they may have done things like opening up the borders, you know, which is a trick where you have to kind of trick the hardware into, you know, allowing sprite data to be visible in that space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, generally it's some people it's competitive. I mean, people make demos to compete against other groups and say, hey, that's cool, but we can do better. But with me, I'm not up there in the lofty heights of, you know, the top groups or anything. I mean, you know, I code like smaller productions, but I just do it for the fun, as they say, not the glory.
Okay, so how did the Art State group form, and how did that all kick off?
There was a. I've got a friend in Poland, Marcin, his name is. He goes by the name of Psycho8580, and he's a very skilled SID composer. Very, very capable. He's got a very nice modern style. There's a lot of very melodic stuff, but also he does a lot of very modern, kind of like dark electronic stuff as well. And I think it was his initiative, basically. Mm-hmm. There was a couple Polish guys that he knew, and they sort of came together. And. Yeah, and I sort of jumped on. But we weren't that active initially. I don't think we really did anything. There was some music released. And then all of a sudden, I thought, right, I better, you know, start coding and try and release a few things. So it's basically stemmed from that. We don't write necessarily to, you know, big productions like Trackmos and things like that. It's, a lot of the stuff is based around music, to be honest, because one of the groups that some of the members are in is Multistyle Labs. And they basically try and push the SID hardware musically. So we've released some music collections. I mean, recently I did a music collection for Psycho8580 called The Sentinel. And it had quite a kind of dark electronic kind of feel to it. Mm. Yeah, it all stems from that. It's mainly music. And I chuck in my design in there, and it's been well received, which I'm quite happy about. I've made a lot of releases over the last year or so. I've been trying to release... an issue of Modular Sounds at, you know, a big party whenever they occur, if I can, just to you know, spread the love.
And are there many of you in the group now?
There's a few members, yeah, but I think we need to coordinate and maybe get together and make something else, because at the moment I'm doing quite a lot of the graphics or the coding, and some of the members are actually very active in other groups as well. But there's quite a few. I couldn't, off the top of my head, I couldn't list them. But there's quite a few. It's mainly musicians, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And how do you code on your C64? Or, you know, like make graphics? What particular tools do you use?
Ah, right. Well, this may shock some people, but I don't necessarily do it on a 64.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. But I'm also kind of middle of the road, because a lot of people will use cross dev environments where they have, for example, either a PC somehow hooked up to an actual real 64.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard of that.
You know. But then other people have actually used like editing environments, and they will send the code to, for example, WinVice.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll, you know, 64Vice. So they'll actually do it that way. But I'm okay. I can't exactly say I'm a purist, because I'm coding on a. You know, a piece of hardware, you know, a modern operating system. But I do tend to code within the emulated environment. I mean, the funny thing is, only recently I started to use something called Turbo Assembler. mm-hmm. which is very much like DevPak on the Amiga, in the sense that, you know, you've got the freedom of scrolling up and down. It's very fluid. Prior to that, I used to code in a assembler called 6510 Plus, and that thing I think was from 85 or so, and it used to have that might come a bit later, 87 I think, but that used to have line numbers in front of each line of assembler, and I used that thing for years, and I was quite comfortable with it, but it started to slow down when my code got longer and longer, and I thought, well, this is getting quite painful now. So then I eventually thought, right, I've heard of Turbo Assembler from whenever, but I just thought one day I'll just start using it, and it's really helped. It just, you know, really helps with the speed of development, really. But other than that, oh yes, the other things I use are things like Project One. So I can, for example, draw graphics in a 64 mode, but use like a Windows-based editor.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the side effect of using that editor is there was actually a bug in it. So when you export the high-res bitmap mode, it's actually inverted. So I had to write some code to flip the upper and lower bytes for the graphics data, because at first I was scratching my head thinking, what's wrong with my code? But so I use tools like that, but not too much, really. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I use a very old copy of PaintShop Pro 4.15 Special Edition, which was an actual freebie given away, I think, on the front cover of PC Format in about the mid-90s or so. And I just use that with very basic, as I say, resolution and also color depth as well. And that's all I use, really, other than a few 64 native graphics editors. But yeah, that's about it, really. It's nothing too advanced.
And so typically, how often do you have a release?
Well, recently, it's been about every month to month and a half, I think, in the last year. I've been trying to... I might be slightly off. It's about two months, I'd say, because I've been releasing modular sounds at some of the, you know, big parties. I visit demoparty.net. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It basically lists all the schedule for all the global copy parties or demo parties. So I look through them and I see the one that I like, and I think, yeah, I'll try and fit that in, and I just try and compile a new episode of issue of modular sounds and release it at that time.
So you try to synchronize to the shows.
Yeah. I mean, for example, I had quite a bit of coverage at Datastorm. Not the Datastorm that occurred, I think, summer. I've got to get used to these different time zones now, because, of course, everything's changed. We're like in spring now, and you're going into autumn, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but earlier in the year, there was another Datastorm party, and I asked Hoffman if he could spread the release for me there, and he happily did. I mean, he picked up the file at the hotel, and they kept on playing it repeatedly at the party. So, for example, in between all the talks and presentations, every time I was watching the feed, you just see the ArtState logo in the background, which is quite nice. So it had quite a bit of coverage, and it was well received, which is nice. I think people enjoy the nostalgia as well. I think there's a lot of love for the 64, and there's also a lot of love for the Amiga. And when you bring Amiga music recreated on the 64, I think it makes for a good combination.
Absolutely.
And what's your life like outside of ArtState then?
Oh, I like to do a lot of, again, with computing. I mean, my background is IT, but that's mainly Mac, a lot of Mac stuff, but I also do Windows, so like IT stuff, and Linux. Mm-hmm. I'm also quite fond of Ubuntu Mate, M-A-T-E, or most people call it Mate, but it's actually Mate.
Yeah,
I run that on an old Windows box. I also use the Raspberry Pi, which I'm incredibly fond of. I've also got a Linux installed on that thing, and I'm telling you, it practically passes as a desktop experience if you run it on a smaller.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you run it on a small SD card, I think it's something to do with the sector sizes. Because when I ran it on a 16 gig card, which was of a similar spec, I started to get lags. But if I run it on an 8 gigabyte card, it's absolutely fluid, and I'm very impressed with it. There's another thing I do with that, though, of course, and that's Amibian. You familiar with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really taken by that, because I attached the Pi, Raspberry Pi, to a 4:3 aspect ratio TFT screen, and I've tweaked all the settings from basically within UAE for ARM, which is what it uses. And then I've also tweaked the workbench. So basically my display and everything is stretched, not stretched, sorry, it's basically configured so it's edge-to-edge screen, so it actually feels like I've got an Amiga in front of me. There's no, you know, black borders here and there. I've tweaked it perfectly, even down to the mouse settings, because I found out that if you run Workbench, and let's say you configure the mouse setting for that environment, if you, for example, let's say, were to click on, you know, the game Walker by, is it by Synosis? I'm trying to
pronounce Synosis, yeah.
Yeah. I find that I couldn't control the crosshair, and I realized that you then have to modify the settings from the actual emulator environment itself. If you tweak that down to 0.25, then you'll have perfect control with games that effectively take over the system. So
to have the low resolution, yeah.
And I've got it just right. Everything, it feels absolutely fantastic. I've managed to install, I think, OS 3.9. I've got various hard disk file images that I've made, and it's really nice. I actually feel convinced that it's like an Amiga. I mean, obviously, there's a couple things that don't work as well. I mean, but I have managed to try some AGA titles. For example, is it Overkill, the car game, the top-down car game?
Yeah, that's the one.
Which is, it always reminds me of Speedball. It does the kind of the graphical style and the kind of, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, that's impressive. And that runs fine. So yeah, but I'm not a huge gamer. I generally tend to watch demos on it. It's very quick and easy if you want to have like an Amiga fix.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's pretty convincing. And I like listening to a lot of Amiga music collections and things like that. So it comes in really handy. But I do have, you know, real hardware as well, like Amiga 500s. Unfortunately, I don't have any of the big box Amigas. I'd love one. I recently saw an A1000 for sale.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Twitter, and the chap was saying he only wanted $350 for it. but I thought by the time it got to New Zealand, it would probably be about $900. So...
yeah.
But yeah, the other thing I like to do outside of ArtState is, although technically it is under the ArtState name, but under the name of ArtState Digital, is motion graphics.
Okay.
So I don't know if you guys, I imagine you may have seen my, I did like a promotional video for a chapter within Chris Wilkins' The Amiga in Pixels book.
No, I'm not familiar with it anyway.
Well, basically, I did a... Well, in the book, there's a 12-page article by Mark Halliwell, otherwise known as Judge Drock of Anarchy, the Amiga demo group. He basically ran the Amiga in the late 80s, early 90s. And as a bit of promotion for the book, we teamed up with Format, Kingfisher, and myself. And I basically created a motion graphic video in a kind of like demo style, basically promoting that part of the book. So that was
very good.
Come out a couple of weeks ago. It's quite well received. Had quite a lot of views within a few days. It was, I think, over 750 views. So it's, you know, it's well received, I think. I think people were quite happy to see the Anarchy name up on the screen again.
Yeah.
Except this time it's in 1920 by 1080. So yeah, I do things like album covers. I've done some album covers for my friend in Denmark, Sid Wave, who's both a 64 musician and also a, you know, real, you know, synth-based BST kind of guy. I've done some, you know, promotional stuff for some DJs in the UK and some music kind of visualizations and things like that. So, but that's the kind of area I'd like to kind of move into, ideally. I mean, IT is great, but it can be a bit draining, especially in high-pressure environments.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's what I do.
Very good.
What were your influences in the early days?
Oh, regarding what, the demo scene? Well, I've always been fascinated by Andrew Braybrook's visual design for his games, particularly things like Morpheus and Intensity. So that very clean, kind of futuristic look, I think I've borrowed from that in my designs over time. But I've always been kind of fascinated by that kind of sci-fi look, very clean, futuristic. But, you know, other than that, it would be a lot of the artwork of Bob Stevenson, who used to do the, as I said earlier, graphics for games like System 3 and things like that. But there was, because in the CompUnit era, Bob Stevenson's also famed for drawing Tutankhamun picture, which was, you know, the one that was used on the Amiga at the time.
The old deluxe paint.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Bob Stevenson was famed for basically recreating that on the Commodore 64. And you know what? He did a pretty good job considering that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because the pixels on the 64 in that particular mode, multicolor mode, they're twice the width. So he did a very good job. I mean, my code or graphics, I tend to do it in their 320 pixels across by 200 high, which is like, mm-hmm. I think the native kind of, you know, the Amiga resolution when you're in D-Paint, you know, assuming you're not using the full, like just like the NTSC kind of size almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, things like that, all that early CompuNet demos, the music, obviously, of Rob Hubbard, you know, great mm-hmm. times. That's always stuck with me. Actually, matter of interest, Abate University, they were just recently running a course on computer game music design from the early days all the way to the current times. And I've just actually finished that yesterday. That actually covered everything from the VCS, Spectrum, and the Commodore 64 and onwards. And it basically showed how music on those platforms and how, for example, the Commodore unleashed, you know, kind of like, because it was effectively a synth, you know, the SID chip, mm-hmm. effectively unleashed the ability for musicians to have greater creative freedom. And then, of course, the Amiga came, and that was covered as well, which was fantastic. So it was really nice to see that that's been recognized and covered, you know, fascinating topic. I've actually in the forums for that course, I've actually provided a lot of links to, for example, to Commodore 64 playing sampled mixed sound at a very high bit rate, or very not high bit rate by modern standards, but for the Commodore 64, very clear audio, high frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And also provided links to, for example, Amiga demo tunes as well, just so people get a feel other than the games, because a lot of people in the retro community, they tend to associate just the game music, and they're not aware of the wider area of the demo scene where there's obviously a lot more creative freedom.
Mm, so I and a lot try, more I focus try, on the music.
Yeah, so I try and spread the love as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. Very good. How long would it typically take to create a demo?
Well, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
How long's a piece of screen?
Yeah.
Well, because I generally don't write too big productions, because I find that, you know, as a lot of us, you'll know, time is, you know, in short supply a lot of the time. You've got a family. It can take quite a while. I mean, I've actually worked on some productions where I've taken ridiculous amounts of time. Mm-hmm. I've like started them years ago, but I know I'll finish them at some point. And you know, in some ways that works, because, for example, if I'm editing some graphics, and if you leave it effectively stewing and you come back to it with a big break between each time, it's amazing what your eyes pick up, which they didn't see before. And I've refined things, and I've looked at some early work stages, and I look at the final result, and I think, my gosh, at one point I was mm-hmm. convinced, let's say halfway through, that would have been acceptable. Had I released it, I would have cried. So it can take, sometimes if you're really committed, it can take maybe, depends what you do, less than a month. But I mean, I tend to code a lot of music collections. So that's like a selector screen with an intro. So mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily take as much time as, let's say, a track mode. I don't code track modes. I haven't got the time for that kind of pursuit. But yeah, mm-hmm. it can take a while. I forgot to mention, actually, I did code a music disc for a Finnish demo group called Spen on Acid. Bit of a interesting name, that.
Right, yeah.
And I did that in, I think, just about 2.5 weeks. That included all the code, graphics for the intro, and also for the main selector, new, fresh design. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, yeah, sometimes it can be quite a rapid. Depends on how motivated, you know, obviously how much time you have available. Sometimes you will have to burn the midnight oil, as they say. But I try mm-hmm. and avoid that now. I don't want to be up till 2 or 3 in the morning. I have done a couple all-nighters into the morning just to get something released in Europe. It's quite a thrill, but I try to avoid that now if I can. It's not good for the heart.
It's not compatible with being a grown-up, I think.
No. It's, it's to be avoided, I think.
Yeah.
If you had to pick a favorite game and a favorite application for some reason, what would they be?
Can I have more than one?
You can.
I guess.
Thank you very much, sir.
We're generous.
Now, on the Amiga, that would there's quite a few that I like. There has to be an Andrew Braybrook title in there, and that would be Paradroid 90.
Mm-hmm.
And also the follow-up Iridium 2, of course. And I'm a huge fan of Battle Squadron, particularly the music by Ron Claren.
Mm.
And also the first game in that kind of Battle Squadron series, which was Hybris. And that had, very nice synthetic music by Paul van der Valk. And I absolutely love that because that kind of simulates synthesis. It's not module-based music, and it's not a module using like a simulated splice of a sample, I believe. Although technically they say that audio on the Amiga does break down to miniature samples. I can't remember the complete science of it, but the music in Battle Squadron and Hybris does sound effectively more synthetic than, you know, than regular chip music. But the other games I really like, and I recommend people to try them out, is Star Ray by Logatron, which is like a two-directional horizontal, kind of a bit like a Defender, if I remember. But it's got really detailed graphics. And then the only two I'll mention, I'll keep it down to shorten it now, and that's Apocalypse, which was like an advanced version of Choplifter. And that had graphics by Paul Doherty, who's a former Compunet graphics scener. And then, of course, Cannon Fodder series.
Oh, of course.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And what about applications? Or is it just all about the games?
No, it's not about the games. No, I mean, I do like games, but and I will play them very occasionally, but no, it's not all about the games. I've got a lot of memories associated with them. Regarding applications, I'd have to say Hisoft Death Pack Assembler. So that's brilliant. D-Paint 2 and 3, obviously for pixels drawing. And then fantastic utility by the Kefrens demo group, which would be IFF to RAW. So that basically convert your bitmaps into a more usable format for your code.
Mm.
But yeah, I've got to remember it. I don't particularly work in it, but I like to use it, and that was AHX.
Okay. And what was AHX for people who aren't
aware? It used to be called THX, but then they had some legal difficulty from a certain large corporation. And
I can imagine.
Is a kind of synthetic module type editor, and they create a really, really nice synthetic sound with that on the Amiga. There's actually been a follow-up since then called Comeback Tracker. I recommend you load up YouTube, type in Comeback Tracker, and you'll see the next generation. Unfortunately, it's not powerful at this time to run on an Amiga, but it's being coded on the PC for high-end machines, and that's fantastic.
Okay.
Right. What about demos? Do you have a few favorite demos outside of your own?
I have a few favorite demos.
Go on. Name them.
I've got a few, but okay. They're probably not the run-of-the-mill demos that people generally refer to, like Enigma by Phenomena, although that is a
Spaceballs,
fantastic demo.
Yeah, Spaceballs, state of the art, yeah.
Oh, yeah, all that kind of stuff. They are great. For example, I would like... have you seen Voyage by Razor 1911?
I haven't, to be honest.
Well, you're in for a treat, because there's some serious blitter manipulation going on. There's some really impressive stuff. It's also got an incredibly amazing soundtrack by Codex, so Mantronics and Tip, which you've got to hear and see. It's very impressive. Another demo I like is Plastic Passion by Upfront.
I know the group, but I haven't seen the demo as well. Go on.
That's very nice. It's got some actually quite impressive effects. Now, the other things I like, because, you know, I like my music collections, that would be Chip Music Festival by Magnetic Fields. And that has something called Future Composer Music in there, which was, again, a sort of synthetic style, but it could incorporate with sample sounds in conjunction. And that was based on the routine from the Atari ST, if I remember correctly. They basically, a group called the Superions, they hacked it and made an editor for it for the Amiga, so they could recreate the same kind of sound and maybe expand on it on the Amiga. The remaining two I like is Amazing Tunes 2 by Sharon and Joy. Highly recommended music collection. Comes on 3 discs. Beautiful music. Really nice interface. And then there's actually 2. Crystal Symphonies 1 and 2 by Phenomena. And Dizzy Tunes by Noiseless and the Silence, which features music.
Yeah, this one is one of the best, I think, Dizzy Tunes.
Yeah, they did a follow-up as well, Dizzy Tunes 2. But the first one has music by Yogi Alushadar, which is absolutely stunning. So, yeah, but that's my demo list. I'll keep it to that, otherwise we'll run out of time.
Okay.
Okay, so what kind of developments would you like to see happen in the, you know, in the near future, in the, you know, in the Commodore or Amiga scene?
Well, I'm kind of interested in the Tabor platform. I'd like to see what happens with that. I think, you know, it's obviously an introductory kind of motherboard. So I think the other one's kind of out of my price reach. Is it the X5000?
Yeah.
So I think that would be a nice platform to have.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right in saying there's also an Amiga 1200 reloaded on the cards from, is it Indivision? Individual computers, yeah.
Yeah, it's been talked about for a while, but no sign of it yet, but that'll be very nice when it comes out.
That sounds promising.
Yeah, because it has the original chips in it as well, of course. So it's a, you know, uprated buses and RAM and all that, but still with the original Blitter and the original custom chips.
Yeah, so I think that's what I'm kind of thinking would be great developments. And I think the work of Trevor Dickinson is fantastic. I mean, the way he's obviously supporting, for example, the events, like he went to AMI Party in Poland. He's obviously, I imagine, going to the Amiga Island soon.
Yeah, he was at ours last January as well.
Yeah, I actually saw part of the speech this morning when the cake was brought in.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice to watch. But yeah, I'd like that to those kind of things to come into effect. Mm-hmm. I think I'll be quite happy about that.
Mm.
I mean, obviously these vampire solutions as well are incredibly promising as well. And also, if I'm not mistaken, the next generation will be a standalone board as well.
Yes, I believe so. And on that, have you looked at or thought about taking advantage of that? Because they have sort of an uprated AGA setup on them, or you know, that's what they're working towards anyway. And do you think that might be interesting from a demo perspective?
It depends on how you could communicate with it. I imagine that wouldn't be true 68,000 code, though. I'm not sure if there's some kind of translation that occurs, because that's running on a...
Well, they have a few extra instructions on it, all right. But like, you know, that basically how they're adding extra registers to the, it's, you know, the standard AGA registers.
Oh, so it's native. It will technically support effectively a Motorola chipset instruction set then.
Yeah, an expanded chips instruction set. So it's effectively like
Super Amiga.
Continuation of the Amiga.
Yeah, I think I saw something mentioned it was going to be like an 080 equivalent or something.
Yeah, that's what they're calling it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be that could be interesting for sure.
Right. And do you go to any retro events, or do you have intention if it comes to going?
Oh, I have intention to go, but being in New Zealand is a bit limiting. I mean, there is actually a party that occurs in Australia, and that's the Syntax event. I mean, I've contributed like an intro at one of the parties, because I just like to, you know, put the name out there, contribute, you know, the kind of community spirit. And I also 1 year released another Modular Sounds release there. And I was watching the stream and they were saying, ArtState Digital, can you please come to the mic? We've got a few questions. And I was thinking, well, I'm not even there. but it was nice. It was nice that it was well received.
Mm.
But yeah, basically... as I say, the plan is to come back to the UK either the middle or late next year. And I think I'd like to potentially go to Nova Party, which used to be known as Sundown Event. Mm-hmm. Hoffman normally visits that. I'd like to catch up with him.
Yeah.
There's other demo sceners that, you know, go old school demos. But yeah, and also I wouldn't mind going to some of these Play Expo events. I hear about them. I know people attend them. But unfortunately, there's no way for me to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So... I've not had much luck in the way of going to any retro events here. I'm not aware of any. There's a couple of people that are known for like the Amiga in New Zealand, but I've tried to reach out for them and I've heard nothing back, except one chap. There's a guy called Tezza that you may have seen on YouTube, who has like a large collection of, kind of retro hardware. But we exchanged a few emails, but he's based, you know, a few hours away from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's going to have to go on hold until I come back to the UK, I think. If that works out, you might see me in Poland.
I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
You never know, maybe even in Ireland as well. So that'd be nice.
Absolutely, be most welcome.
Thank you very much. I'd love to do that.
Okay, so you've posted a few links recently to some mods on Amiga Love.
Oh, yes.
So, but in particular for Spell Amelioration by Uncle Tom.
Yep.
Tell us about how the sounds were created for that.
Well, that's... I mean, I'm not an expert in the sense of I don't create modules myself. Those are sampled sounds, basically processed and edited within, I imagine at the time it would have either been Soundtracker or ProTracker. Mm-hmm. So that's the environment that those would have been created in, manipulated with the instructions that you can, as it plays real time, they can manipulate the effects on the sound. But all mm-hmm. those links that I provided, especially the first one, which was Physical Presence by Yogi Ullaljadal, which is one mm-hmm. of my favorite modules.
Yeah.
They're all created in either Soundtracker or ProTracker. And yeah. normally very small in size. I mean, I think a lot of people who are outside of the demo scene or have no knowledge of the Amiga and they'll listen to these modules and then you say to them, oh, by the way, that's like 156K or 220K. their brains fall out of their heads. They just can't believe it's even possible. So it's quite an achievement. I mean, especially the work by Hoffman. I mean, Hoffman uses, I think, a trick where he blends samples together. So he gets the impression of more sounds. There's a particular mm-hmm. tool. I can't remember the name of it right now, top of my head. But yeah, there's some pretty interesting developments there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you see the last link, which was back again by Format?
I didn't, no. No,
that's worth checking out. I actually tweeted the YouTube link to that so people could see it playing. I mean, that was actually released by Format in 2003, but it's an absolutely incredible piece of chip music, very emotive music. It's just wonderful. It goes on for quite a while as well. Mm-hmm. Highly recommended.
Absolutely, I'll check it out.
Right, I've got another like a technical question. Is there much difference between coding on C64 and Amiga?
Oh yes. Yeah, go on. There's far more data registers and address registers mm-hmm. on the Amiga. Obviously, you've got all that custom hardware at your disposal, like the Blitter, mm-hmm. for shifting large chunks of information around. 64, you know, is quite limited. You know, you've got your accumulator, X and Y register, some commands for exchanging the values between them, maths type commands. But on the C64, I was always told never perform any calculations. If you're going to do something, do it on a table. Use an offset, you know, mm-hmm. like calculate into a table. And that's, you know, very good. And the other thing, obviously, on the Commodore 64, people tend to have what they called unrolled loops, where they don't have like, you know, like a counter saying, you know, repeat this mm-hmm. section. Because if you were to have that code in there, constantly checking, are you at the end? You're taking cycles away, and the 64 has only so many per frame. So the idea is you just have all those instructions either generated with your code, filling up the memory. So it's just a continual stream of instructions mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to, you know, obviously speed things up. I mean, obviously that might be a good way to go on the Amiga as well, you know, the time. But obviously you've got considerably more power on the Amiga 500, for example, which there have been a lot of very nice releases of late. I've actually not coded on the Amiga for quite a while, but hopefully, this might be a bit unrealistic, but I was trying to do some Amiga releases this year, but I've encountered a slight problem, and that is I had some discs with all my code and games and things like that, and I left them in a large plastic tub in the garage. The garage, mm-hmm. you know, seems dry, but because I live about 225 feet above sea level, not too far away from the sea, I think they may have suffered as a result.
No. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I've actually got a little bit of you know what they call disc rot.
Yeah.
But thankfully, I found a way of cleaning it off. It's very time consuming, using an earbud and then cleaning. You know, you can use alcohol or you can use a very slight bit of moisture. Probably not recommended. Alcohol's probably better.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you basically just dry it off. If it's alcohol off, obviously it'll evaporate. But you have to do that both mm-hmm. sides, and you have to turn the disc from the spindle and rotate it. And that's actually mm-hmm. what caused one of my A500 discs to malfunction the other day, and I tweeted about how to resolve that
mm-hmm.
Because the crud or the grime will accumulate on the reed head
on the heads, the yeah, heads. Yeah.
And because it's so close, it sounds like someone's running their fingers down glass or a blackboard with chalk. But very easily fixed. Just clean it up. And but as I was saying, the problem with the disc rot has impacted on my coding because a lot of my code was backed up on those discs. But I'm hopeful that you know, I can clean those up and actually convert them to either, you know, new media or put them onto WinUAE or something, onto a more modern machine.
Yeah, just
keep it safe on there for now.
I just recently saw something, and I'm trying to remember where now, but someone had 3D printed a little frame that you put the floppy disk in that holds the door open, and a little sort of a little knob you can insert into the center of it that you can twist, makes it easier to twist the disk exactly for that purpose.
Oh, do you know what? That is fantastic. Because
yeah,
I was wondering, has anyone ever come up with an idea to do that? Because the only thing I actually tried similar to that was use a piece of Blu-Tack.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a bit of a low-tech solution, but it kind of worked.
Yeah. It's kind of like the pencil in the cassette tape, you know?
Yeah. So, but that could work.
You should.
Thanks for that. Thanks for
absolutely. No problem. But yeah, I only saw it there a couple of days ago, and I'm trying to remember whether it was on Facebook or on one of the forums or something. But anyway, I'm sure you can find it and get him to send him a few quid and he'll 3D print you one, I'd say. I'm sure.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to do that because there's an intro I was working on, which I'd like to polish up, you know, and make it not only A500 but A1200 compatible.
Yeah, excellent.
And then get that released at some point under the ArtState name. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a music collection. Actually, I started a very long time ago. In fact, I started it in the 90s. it's actually the beginnings of Modular Sounds. Modular Sounds was initially an Amiga project, and it was going to contain lots and lots and lots of chip music at the time, and basically load it in. There was, you know, parallax scrolling, Starfield, multi-layered Starfields, reflective metal font scrolling with, you know, lovely raster fades. I had a water effect with a ripple reflecting all that. So I think it'd be nice to get that finished and actually get it out there. I think it would look pretty good, even there.
Mm. Sounds good. Do you still have your original Commodore 64?
I do indeed, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
I tweeted it a few months ago. It's because at the time, you know, when also later when the Amiga came out, there was a lot of Amiga kind of like wanting. And as a result, I cut out these Amiga ticks and I put them on my Commodore hardware. So I had like the Amiga tick on my Commodore 64. And I also had an Amiga tick on my C2N deck, which also still functions fine. I used that recently because a friend of mine, you know, Mark R. Jones, he used to work at Ocean Software to do the graphics.
I can't say I do now.
All right. Well, he did the graphics for things like Total Recall and things like that.
Right. But yeah.
As a favor, he tweeted asking if anyone could record their copy of a game back onto a C15 cassette, which he then hopes to transfer and reinstall into the original case of his real copy, because unfortunately he bought it off eBay and it's been snapped in the middle.
Oh,
so
dear.
What I recently did is he sent me a tape all the way from Manchester to New Zealand, and I've converted the a TAP file, which is like a digital capture of a real audio cassette, and I've transferred it now back to audio cassette, both sides, and that's going to be making its way back to him soon.
Excellent. Yeah. Have you heard anything about, you know, like NG systems, like OS4, Morpho-S, or AROS? What's your opinion about them?
Yeah, there was also Amiflon, I believe.
Yes, there was. Yeah, yeah. That was kind of a hybrid x86 UAE kind of setup, wasn't it?
Well, I tried that, and unfortunately, it wouldn't boot on my only kind of relatively powerful PC, because the other PC's got Hackintosh on it.
Right.
Yeah, there's a very high percentage of either Amiga, Apple gear in this family. But
fair
unfortunately, I couldn't get Amiflon to run. I was very tempted to buy a Mac Mini. I think, is that a G4 or G5?
G4. I can't remember
the G4s,
I think Lukasz has got one of those.
Yeah, I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was tempted to go that way, but I think my wife was under the belief that I'd reached, you know, kind of retro saturation and had far too much, you know, gear lying around. Mm-hmm. So I kind of decided it'd be safer to steer clear of that. But there was one going in very good condition with, you know, a good price.
Yeah.
I
used to service some Apple stuff. I actually did some of the Apple training back in the day. So.
All right.
They could be a bit problematic when they failed, but if you've got one that works, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I've not had not been fortunate enough to try things like OS, 4. Is it 4.1 is the current version with the...
Yeah, that's basically it, yeah.
I have been following it, obviously. Like, I've been watching Amiga Bill. He did, a video on the process of installing it, and, you know, I was quite interested in it. But I think he's installed it on an emulator.
Wee.
So, yeah, it'd be nice to try. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, if I assume that will run fine on the Tabor system.
Yeah, that's built for it, you know, and there'll be a lot more sort of freedom because the emulators are, well, they're limited to the equivalent classic that they're emulating, you see. So
right.
OS 4 will run on a classic, but it's you know, you're still talking to it's emulating a 20-year-old accelerator, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so you've got your limitations.
And you're
there.
Restricted with only 128 megabytes of RAM as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they recently sorted that out, didn't they? Because you can emulate now a Zero 3, a big RAM card, in chunks of 256.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I think that's sorted. But anyways, you have to work around it effectively. You can't just say, well, there's 2 gigs of RAM. So there are some. As a taster, I'm sure it's fine. But I think the Tabor would be probably a much more flexible setup.
Yeah. I mean, failing that, I wouldn't mind an Amiga 1000, like twin kick. You probably saw Amiga Love tweeted about that recently, about how, you know, you can basically load the 3.1 or 1.3 ROM.
From floppy disk. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, yeah.
I was also, because I've got quite a good memory from the demo scene in a historic kind of way, and there was also a similar solution released in 1989 by Razer.
Mm-hmm.
They called it A500 kick reset. If I'm not mistaken, they did the same thing, but for the Amiga 500, whereby you could load a 1.3 ROM on a 1.2 machine, so mm-hmm. it'd load off the disk. But of course, the problematic thing there is that you need enough memory to accommodate the additional, you know, ROM.
That's
file.
It. It's an extra. Well, the 1.3 is 256K, and if you've only got half a meg, it's substantial.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's quite interesting. Yeah, I think the Tabor sounds appeals to me, and also the footprint's quite small on that motherboard.
Yeah, if you get a small case, you can have a reasonable. Yeah, it's not as small as a Mac Mini now, but it is. It is somewhat more friendly than an enormous Terra case.
I've always had this thing that where computing should be getting smaller.
Yeah,
I mean, if I could do motion graphics on a Raspberry Pi, I'd be in heaven.
Yeah,
but it's not going to happen at the moment. I've got Hackintosh for that particular purpose.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And our last question now: what's your favourite memory from Commodore and Amiga over the years? That's quite an open one, but there you go.
I imagine there's quite a few because I've just been in awe of their stuff from day one. I mean, obviously, my greatest memory would have been getting my 64. I think I was ecstatic when I got that. Mm-hmm. And obviously equally over the moon when I got an Amiga 500. The demo scene on that thing, I mean, I remember seeing a Unit A intro, which has got like these three hooded kind of monks floating with kind of Starfield. This was, I think, on FA-18 Interceptor, the game. I remember seeing this mm-hmm. at some guy's house. So memories like that come to mind, and also, like, you know, some of the early demos from groups like Dexion. I'm trying to think of who else, but they're quite early demos. They're like late 80s, things like that. But obviously, demo scene events were phenomenal to go to. For example, going to the Anarchy 92 party, you know, getting to see that kind of community, the amount of people that turned up and the kind of, mm-hmm. you know, the vibe was really impressive. Equally with the event in Norway that I attended, Gathering 93. I think mm-hmm. those are the memories that kind of stay with me. And it's quite sad to, you know, witness the demise of Commodore.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people were impacted by that. I was talking to Dan Wood on IRC some months ago, and he was telling me how he felt about it, and I could relate. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a part of your life, you know, and there was a very thriving community. You know, everybody, lots of people had, you know, the hardware, and, you know, it was very vibrant. I mean, I do feel like there's a kind of rebirth of that feeling now, especially through social media. There's a lot of people out there. To me, I feel like it's very much alive. I mean, obviously the demo scene's been going on in the background, but I'm just saying about the wider kind of community.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. You know, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's all these like kind of, you know, hardware developments and projects. I think it's, I think we've got an interesting future ahead. You know, we've got an Amiga.
Absolutely.
But it's very, it's a great platform. I think it's attracted a lot of very nice people to it.
Mm.
And, you know, that thing was effectively, you know, almost 10 years ahead of the competition, but yet, you know, nobody really knows about it. But as Trevor Dickinson said, he said it's the victors who write history.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah.
So I think there has been some revisionism whereby, you know, certain companies, you know, Apple, IBM, etc., have taken the glory, but, you know, it took them a long time to get to where they are now. I mean, the Amiga, you know, when it came in, was it 85?
Yeah.
You know, just blew people's minds away. And it carried on, you know, producing incredible solutions, you know, well into the 90s.
Yeah.
It's good. They're all very good times, very special times as well. And for me, they're not over yet.
No, absolutely.
The spirit lives on.
Yeah, definitely. Right, thank you, Andre, for joining us today. That's all from us this time. Bye, and take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, and bye-bye.